Hello and welcome to the Decibel Boost Podcast monthly album roundup for the month of August 2020. I'm your host, Robert, and now Scott Pilgrim has to take on Ubisoft. And with me, I have...
You say August, but it feels like one really long month. Helluary. Or at least that's what it is in California right now. Thanks a lot, everyone.
And...
introducing the Mac Meal at McDonald's. It's just a big member of bacon and jalapenos. And fries. And fancy, there you go.
You know, I'm not gonna lie, at least jalapenos would actually sound pretty tasty, and if nothing else, at least something that's not already offered on the frickin' menu. Seriously, like, okay, so the other day I went to go get lunch at McDonald's. I obviously didn't get the Travis Scott meal. I got myself 20 McNuggets and some fries. I took a very close look at the normal menu offerings just to confirm something, and yes, they do in fact already offer quarter pounder with cheese with bacon. So it's like, Travis Scott, your favorite topping, at least one of them is already offered on the menu, and the other one is lettuce? What's so special about lettuce? Who the fuck puts lettuce on a quarter pounder with cheese? What is wrong with you?
Yeah, you gotta keep it simple, like what I do. Two McChickens with cheese, six nuggets, strawberry cream pie, fries, Diet Dr. Pepper.
There you usually go. I just either go, you know, Big Mac, double quarter pounder, the buttermilk chicken thing, or just nuggets. And then usually, you know, fries and a Coke with what I try to request, no ice. Although obviously I've been dealing with ice ever since, you know, the drive-thru thing. Because I try not to be a hassle to the drive-thru employees. They're not probably not getting paid enough to deal with this shit. But seriously, does he seriously get extra ice? Extra ice in your Sprite, dude.
Extra ice? I mean, really?
Your drink is not supposed to be more than 50% ice cubes. That's just a waste.
Yeah, like, you could just put your mouth up to, like, the freezer and then just chew and munch if that's what you're craving. And we don't even have time to go into the merchandise, because there's an album roundup we have to do, but we'll joke about it next time. Let's just say, Weeaboos, you are no longer the saddest people on the planet. And I include myself in that as well. But anyway, yeah, August, album releases, relatively more manageable than, you know, letting the releases just kind of sneak up on you. So as always, we start by recapping what the hell actually came out this past month. Starting in the realm of rock, indie, punk, country, etc. Starting at the top, we had a new album from the band Paris with Use Me. There was a new album from country musician Luke Bryan with Born Here, Live Here, Die Here. There was a new album from Tim McGraw with Here on Earth. There was a new Deep Purple album, apparently, called Whoosh. Literally, that's it. It's just called Whoosh.
Okay.
There was a new Seether album with a ridiculously pretentious Latin title, Si Vis Pacem Parabellum. Like, y'all think you're cool enough to be using Latin in your titles. What are you, a technical death metal band? Come on. And then, of course, there was that new Killers project, Exploding the Mirage. Moving to the realms of metal and hardcore, there was a new Avatar album, Hunter Gatherer, the return of Misery Signals with Ultraviolet, a brand new Pig Destroyer EP with the Octagonal Stairway, a new Ulver project, Flowers of Evil, John Petrucci releasing his second solo full-length, Terminal Velocity. There was also a new Pain of Salvation album, Panther. There was a new Power Man 5000 project, The Noble Rot. Sludge Metalers Primitive Man with their newest album, Immersion. There was a new album from Underground Thrash Metalers Expander with Neuropunk Booster Gang. There was a new release from Experimental Black Metalers Kralis with Mass Cathexis. There was a new Black Crown Initiate album with Violent Portraits of Doomed Escape. The second full-length album from hardcore act Year of the Knife with Internal Incarceration. And biggest of all, Metallica finally putting out SNM2 on home video for all the world to experience. Now moving on to your hip-hops and whatnot, we had a new project from Mine with Limbo. There was a new Lil Keed project, Trapped on Cleveland 3. Speaking of, you know, XXL freshmen, there was a new Wife is Funeral project called Pain? Question mark. There was a new Boldy James project, The Versace Tape. There was that new Nas album, King's Disease. And I think there was a new Conway the Machine project. I'm trying to remember whose album got delayed to further down the road. Was it Conway or was it West Side Gun? I lose track.
Okay, Conway is coming out, well, actually tomorrow. And West Side Gun got delayed his project. I think mainly due to a devil public news, you know, a DJ Shay, who sadly passed away of COVID complications.
Ah, right. I get confused with their release schedule sometime.
Yeah.
Finally, in the realm of pop and electronic, there was a new Washed Out project, Purple Noon. There was a new Disclosure album, Energy. There was a new project from Dark Zero called Zero Two, no relation to Darling in the Franxx. We had the newest full length from Sev DeLiza with Shabrang. There was a new Gloria Estefan album, Brazil 305. A new Cut Copy project, Freeze Melt. And there was also a new Katy Perry album called Smile. Or as I know it, fifth place, Metallica fourth place. just so we know where the score is at right now. I feel like that's important to mention. But with that out of the way, now we can dig into the nitty-gritty of what we were all listening to. As always, starting with Mr. Alex.
Yeah, and this time around, I don't have, like, 20 albums to talk about in some capacity. I only have 5. So, you know, lighter month. But just as meaty impact. These first two, though, I don't have too much to say for both good and bad. Starting with Terminal Velocity, the second solo album from John Petrucci and his first one in 15 years. Or would it be his third album if we're counting that really rare Sega Saturn pinball Necronomicon soundtrack thing?
Sega what
now? I don't know. It's a long story. This album. For what it's worth, instrumental albums like this tend to give me a bit of trouble to really talk about because there's only so much I can say in normal terms that don't go into a gigantic filibuster over music theory. You know, like the one with Patton Oswalt in Star Wars. So I'll just classic. Keep this one short and brief. Hearing John Petrucci and Mike Portnoy perform together is just the one damn bright spot of this god for fuck's sake in year. And yes, Dave LaRusse here as well, supplying the bass backup, and he does a very fantastic job all throughout the whole album. So if you like instrumental prog goodness that ranges wide from hard metal to jazz fusion and everything in between, then this is the album for you. It's very good. What isn't very good, though, is this new Seether album, whatever the fuck it's called, I don't know. I don't speak Italian.
Apparently they're trying to come up with titles for Final Fantasy games now.
Yeah. Or some other random Vanillaware Atlas wannabe game, but whatever. Okay, so Seether. I have a bit of a touchy history with this band. Let's go all the way back to 2004, when the world seemed much, much, much simpler. When all I had to worry about was the new iPod. It's so tiny and aluminum. We're old. So yeah, 2004. This was my sort of entryway year into the world of this heavy, aggressive, ravenous, angry music known as rock and roll. And one of those albums that served as my entry point was Seether's debut album, or rather the re-release debut album, Disclaimer 2. That, along with many other albums, mostly from Wind Up Records, at one point one of the biggest indie labels in the industry, and now they don't exist anymore. Because they got greedy. So yeah, Disclaimer. Or Disclaimer 2, the 20-track re-release that had a bunch of new tracks and soundtrack tracks. Which, by the way, speaking of Wind Up, they did, like, 17 different soundtrack albums for Marvel movies back then. It was kind of weird. But, yeah. Disclaimer. Fantastic album. I still listen to it to this very day. It holds up surprisingly well, all things considered, considering this was back in the both heyday and waning years of the whole post-grunge scene, as it was starting to morph closer to metalcore going into the second half of the 2000s. But yeah, for what it's worth, that album still holds up really well. And then Karma and Effect happened, and, well, we got Remedy, that's a good song. The rest of the album didn't really make any waves. I couldn't even tell you the other tracks on there. And then Finding Beauty in Negative Spaces happened. When your album has a 39 on Metacritic, that's a bad sign.
Ooh.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, it's not like an album you'd see on Train Records or Regretting the Past, because it did have some good singles. It's just the rest of the album that kind of slumped. I mean, when you're writing a track called Fuck Me Like You Hate Me, Sean, you were going through a bit of a midlife crisis when Amy Lee dumped you, weren't you?
Yeah, that song title sounds like it has some very uncomfortable implications. That should probably be discussed album, with a professional.
That whole album had some issues going along with it. While on the other hand, Evanescence had The Open Door, a top 10 hit with Come When You're Sober, and yeah, that was a good album too. I'm going to be honest, after that album came out from Seether, I sort of drifted away from them. I got into, you know, other stuff like Avenged Sevenfold, Dream Theater, Wolfram Valentine, etc. And so, yeah, I didn't really do what I did with Wolfram Valentine 2 years ago and go on a gigantic deep dive of the back catalog. Probably would have bored me anyway. So for this album, I just went in completely blind, ready to expect very little, and I got very little. I just don't have much to say about this album in particular. It doesn't have any bite to its punch. It's mostly coming off like it's background noise, with the same traits that this band had back in 2005, still carrying through 13 years later. It's just one of those it's there albums. It exists to serve a very baseline, minimal purpose. The one bright spot I could point to on this album maybe would be the track Dangerous, but that's only because there's a very obvious Tool-influenced bass line on that track in the start, but not even that does anything for me. Don't break new ground, just follow the beaten path. It feels very apropos for this album, as the song says. What a waste.
And now we can presumably go back to never thinking about this band ever again.
Yeah. Still not sure what to think about that logo of theirs, considering it looks like the logo for the movie Overlord. Okay, then, moving on from there, Pain of Salvation, another band I got into later on in my formative discovery years. Their new album, Panther. So back in 2017, this band took top honors with In the Passing Light of Day being my favorite album of the whole year. And here we are 3 years later with a new album from them. And I think I finally figured out how Accelerator is counted. It's in 12/16 time, but just filled with polyrhythms all over the place.
The mystery has been partly solved.
Yeah. Thank you, math. So now that I've got that out of the way, I can talk about the album proper. The theme of this album seems to be outcasts in a world of normalcy, in quotation marks, like in the title track, and in Unfuture with the lines, welcome to the new world, safe sound, sublime, a better and improved world for our mankind, which is all too fitting in this year of our satanic lore 2020, especially with how slow and plodding this track plays out, along with the tracks that follow, Restless Boy being very electronically filtered, which kind of reminds me a bit of some of the tracks from A Thousand Suns by Linkin Park, which is good because I like that album and it's good. You're wrong, Luke. I'm sorry. And the track Wait with its somber piano melody. And unlike the previous album, though, it's not as focused on a singular musical theme or motif, instead going for more of an all-encompassing theme within the album's spoken message. The title track in particular brings up this notion of societal discord with a synthetic beat and some swift vocal work from Daniel Gildenlow that comes off very similar to Spitfall off of Scarsick, which I love, by the way. Second favorite album of theirs behind The Perfect Element. When's part three happening, Daniel? Come on, it's been 20 years. Yeah. Yeah, talking about the so-called normal, the so-called effective. And I said I feel like a panther trapped in a dog's world. Once again, very fitting given rapidly gesturing at everything. Now, the track Species is more of a guitar chord-driven downbeat ballad. Starts off very clean and quiet before growing more aggressive in its second half. And it's just full of a lot of relatable lines, like, I stopped watching the news, it was hurting me so. And my generation was fooled to pursue our dreams, but it was not what it seems. You'll never need what you want, and you really want what you need. And a harsh hook of, sometimes I hate this fucking species. Once again, vaguely gestures at everything. And that leads into the 13-minute closer, Icon. Another slow-building monolith of a track that's full of hypnotically sonic melodies with the musings of growth from childhood to adulthood in this very divisive, cancerous world of ours, from longing to lament. Yeah, very strong closer, and in whole, it's a very solid album from this band. Maybe not on that same level as their last one, but it's still a strong output that changes up just enough to make it stand out, be it from the production elements, how they recorded the drums, because if you've seen those videos, they did some pretty interesting techniques to record the drums in specific ways. And of course, the overall theme of fuck this straight earth. So yeah, that's more wholesome, family-friendly goodness from Daniel Gildenlow and Company, as per usual. Now, this next one, this was something that caught my attention from someone in the Rocked Discord, and I believe the description was along the lines of Bandcamp Emo Shiz. The debut album from, and I swear this is a legitimate band name, Guitar Fight from Fooly Cooly. So,
okay.
Yes, that is, in fact, their real name. Guitar Fight from Fooly Cooly. It's very, very on the nose. And this is probably one of the most unique albums I've heard all year. It's not quite Bandcamp emo shiz. I would say it's more along the lines of, talking about Fooly Cooly, The Pillows meets The Fall of Troy, with a little bit of Mass Core sprinkled in throughout. It's a pretty short album, only around 28 minutes, but it's got a ton of charm to it. Super heavy, crunchy guitar chords, very loud, boisterous, swift drumming. So yeah, emo punk. It's fantastic. The first track even opens up with samples from Super Mario 64. It's called 64. Yeah. And in case you're wondering how much of a weebcore band, it's what it says on their Bandcamp page, how much of a band they are. Their second track is called My Friends Are My Power, parentheses, spoiler alert. It's about Kingdom Hearts.
Oh, now I have to hear this.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a very interesting album. It's just full of a lot of 20-something moods to be had, like on the track Fourth Gen, talking about playing a Gen 4 Pokemon game, which is something I've been doing throughout the year. Oh, and yes, there are Fooly Cooly samples to be found, mostly on the track Teen's Candle, talking about hairstyles. Yeah. One extra point I want to make is the track Dr. Robot. It comes in sounding like some of the harshest metal shit a band like this could come up with. Only to be amplified even further on the final track, Tea and Crumpets, which just sort of says, fuck everything, let's just destroy the whole room. It's a very loud track and I like it. But the true standout has to be the track Stay Hydrated, Fuck 'em, with the fantastic closing lines of fuck you and who you stand for too, and the boys in blue, and the establishment which hides the truth. Also on their Bandcamp page is the description anti-cop, so yeah. This is a band for the people and for the children. And silly band name aside, no joke, this is a killer album. Immediate top 5 year end candidate for me. It's very solid. And now I get to talk about frontrunner for my favorite album of the whole year, but I'm going to take my bias away and disqualify it from the top reigns just to make it a little more fair for everyone. Metallica S&M 2. Fun fact, I got my box set 2 days before release day because I pre-ordered it ahead of time. And good thing I did because that shit sold out pretty fast.
So I heard.
Yes, so I'm very glad about that. And I've been wondering how to go about this. How should I talk about the second iteration of my favorite live concert ever? Well, I'll just talk about the pros and cons. I'll get the cons out of the way just so I can just get them out of the way. I am a little disappointed that there is no 4K Blu-ray because, from what I understand, this concert was shot with 4K digital cameras, so that's kind of a bummer. We're missing out on a fantastic visual experience and a Dolby Atmos mix. Second, on the Blu-ray, there are no individual audio mixes, so there's no band-only mix and there's no orchestra-only mix. That makes me sad. That's one of my favorite things about the original S&M release. You had those separate mixes, which from my understanding was because they spent a lot of time and spent a lot of money mixing everything individually. Not so much here. While the first S&M release had the Bob Rock seal of approval, sounding very pristine, almost to the point of sounding too cleaned up with some pitch-corrected vocals. This one, it definitely has the Greg Fiddleman sound of what I call flat but punchy. Nothing really stands out too hard, but there's just enough oomph to it, mostly in the drums and guitars, that it does sort of add a little bit of flavor to the whole sound. Even if some of the drums didn't sound so great and some of the orchestra arrangements didn't come out so clear. But I'll get to that in just a moment. Now, of this concert, there were some new tracks that were brought into the fray compared to the original S&M release. Three tracks being from Hardwired, Confusion, Moth into Flame, and Halo on Fire. And while the original concert had Michael Kamen handling, well, all of the arrangements to the point of spending months on end perfecting every part note for note, I don't think they had the same luxury with this one, because I believe the name is Bruce Mitchell, who handled the arrangements for this concert, along with reusing Michael Kamen's arrangements from the first concert with the original songs. So, that's cool. That being said, some of these new arrangements don't totally work. There's a lot of doubling and tripling of the guitar parts, which works fine in some cases, but imagine the Call of Cthulhu if it didn't have all these super flowery harmonies and counterpoints to accompany the guitar. Imagine if when the full band kicks in, you get that arpeggiated riff, that da 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 da, if she hears that, and all you hear are the violins just doubling and tripling up on it. It wouldn't sound as good. That's kind of the problem I have with some of these new arrangements. They don't sound as good as they could have been. Because there wasn't enough focus on adding in layers and harmonies and counterpoints. You know, all that stuff I studied music theory for. Or something. I'm stumbling over my words. I'm very tired. Yeah, there's that. The Day That Never Comes kind of works in that regard, but kind of doesn't. Because, again, there's a lot more doubling and tripling on top of the guitars. So, take it or leave it. However, with Master of Puppets, why in the hell did they rearrange it? You didn't have to rearrange it for the orchestra. You could have just used the Michael Kamen arrangement. That was perfect. This just felt very lacking for the same reason I mentioned before. Not enough counterpoints. Too much doubling. Yeah. Kind of sucked. And just a nitpick for the visual presentation. They didn't quite fix every aspect on the Blu-ray. There were still some key sections that they didn't put in the final edits, which kind of upset me. If you're going to have lead bass lines, like on The Call of Cthulhu and For Whom the Bell Tolls, show Robert Trujillo playing the bass lines. Come on, man. Yeah. Okay. All the cons out of the way. Now as for the pros, this is an amazing concert to behold. Like, I've probably mentioned this a couple times before. I was an orchestra kid in middle school and high school. And we didn't have the same luxuries that the band did, or the choir did, or all the sports team did. We were at the very, very, very bottom. And, discovering this concert, back when I had, when I first discovered it, almost over, how long has it been? 15, 16 years ago? God, I don't even know how long. Blew my mind, changed my life. Absolutely loved it. Having a second version of it is, well, just as cool as when I saw it the first time. Now, of the new songs they added into the set list, along with, favorites like Outlaw Torn, which is awesome, No Leaf Clover, and, as I mentioned, Call of Cthulhu, they put in some new tracks in here. Namely, an orchestra-only piece, Sergei Prokofiev's Scythian Suite, Opus 22, separate, which is a very heavy, almost primal-sounding orchestral piece. It sort of blends in really well with the whole metal scene. I mean, if classical music and metal didn't work together, we wouldn't have half of Children of Bodom's discography.
This is true.
Yeah. And what makes it even cooler is when you have the band coming in to play on Alexander Mosolov's The Iron Foundry, Opus 19. A little repetitive in parts, but it's more about building the soundscape, just how heavy and aggressive it can be. But the three standouts are probably the three weirdest pieces on here, because they're not totally full band pieces. The Unforgiven 3. It is James Hetfield singing by himself with just the orchestra playing the track. It sounds absolutely divine, and even more impressive when you consider that this was about a month before he had to check himself back into rehab.
Ah, right, that did happen.
Yeah, so he wasn't in the best of shape going at the end of this tour cycle, but he still managed to pull off a fantastic performance. All Within My Hands, that heavy-ass track from St. Anger, you know the one. Just imagine me clanking on a gigantic trash can lid. They rearranged this track to make it more of an acoustic song. And with an orchestra, it works way better than it has any right to. And, well, good for them. They pushed this out as a radio single. Number one on Billboard's mainstream rock chart. So, good for them. And by the way, for the record, I've been going back to listen to St. Anger it's not as bad of an album as everyone says it is. I dare say it's misunderstood in so many ways. But that's just me. The one standout on this whole thing, though, would have to be the solo performance of Anesthesia Pulling Teeth, performed by the stand-up bassist of the orchestra, whose name is unfortunately escaping me. God damn it. I can't think of the name. Forgive me. But, yeah. Stand-up bass with a ton of overdrive and a little bit of wah, and you have Lars coming in on the drums to sort of lead into the second half of it. Once again, Orchestra Kid, mind-blowing to hear a friggin' stand-up bass playing all of that. So, yeah. Very, 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 very good live concert performance. Especially since this was, by all accounts, recorded as a live concert performance, as there weren't any real overdubs or necessity to stay in time. Lars. yeah, they all speed up because they're very lazy. Their words, not mine. Listen to the Howard Stern interview. But yeah, fantastic concert, fantastic presentation. I am glad I got my box set because it's long gone, yo. Long gone. So yeah, that's all I've got. I've only had 5 things, but I sure did talk a lot about them.
Yeah, I gotta get my hands on that SNM2 thing myself. You know, experience it for my own. But with that part out of the way, now we move on to the middle, and now it's Mark's turn to talk about some albums.
Yes. I got about 9 albums on the docket because, well, it's probably, well, the most time I've got a single digit album count since, I don't know, since maybe February. But yeah, keep them down short. I'm good to the point. First up, we got Aminé's new album, Limbo. And now I may come going to this album. I did have my expectations set kind of low because I wasn't feeling most of the singles, like Re-Week and Compensating, which were very average at best. And I was interested in some of the views that got in here, like you got Ben Staples, Slow Tie, and Injury Reserve. And how it played out, this album actually ended up being better than I expected. I'll say it won't be my best stuff list, but I'm pretty sure it's definitely an approval from his first album, to be honest. Okay, I'll say his rapping is more interesting. The beat selection is more, you know, more dynamic than less and less poppy. Like, we started with the track Burden, which started with this very wailing sample on the chorus. That sounds familiar to me right now because it's the most. Where I know that sample from? It's from a track called Figure God by Dorando, and I heard that before on another song. And it was West Side Gunn's track from Supreme by a Tale, WrestleMania 20 with Anderson .Paak. Cause I knew that sample was so fucking familiar there, and just like, wow, that's interesting. And I will say some bars here on Bars of the Country, like, shit, it's legal now, the dealers know the jig is up. When it's us niggas getting years, maybe 10 or up, sucking them all through the same, but government don't give a fuck. True. And the ink around was like, type it up, my boyfriend got a baby, woo, you 25, I told that nigga, woo, you fucking crazy, me, I'm the one who need the Lord to save me. Last time I was at a church was in the fucking 80s, can you believe that? I was born in 94. Can you believe that? Okay, alright. Hey, you know some roots about his song, about, I'm guessing, Killer Like Davis from, you know, from Plans to His Heritage, which he says he's a child of Ethiopia and I cannot say this fucking word, Eritrean immigrants, which, okay, it's about that shit, which, okay, this is pretty good. You got some from Charlie Wilson, who always lived his soulful vocals on here, and Jin continues to do his thing, which, alright, it's cool. It's alright, like, you got some cool tracks in here, like, you got Shimmy, which was released prior to this album, like, it was released maybe like a year ago, I just didn't know about it yet, like, it is him being, you know, braggy and flexing, but it works in his favor because it actually sounds good, and him implementing Shimmy Shimmy Ya by ODB, which, okay, there are some cool points by me. This song sounds pretty good so far. Saquon pressured my palms, which has this feeling which equals hard on his beat, which the first half being like very bass and grit heavy, second's more breezy and laid back. Although I will say that is a track that features slow time and staples. I'll say this, if you spend a whole lot of them, you can be disappointed, like they share a verse, it's not that long. I mean the track's still pretty dope and I think it's so anime. Amina shows a lot more improvement here. Like this beat is pretty, when she was bald nigga, punkin' niggas before there was punk nigga, spoken action cush out, that's why I calmed down. We don't want to hear niggas take my nigga. I think niggas like barbers and you know all that shit. And what I'll say, there's some tracks I do like. We'll say the one with the relationship shit, it's kind of the weakest point for me because, like I said, Riri was average, compensating was blah, even though I didn't like that Young Thug mentioned Daffy Duck in his verse, which that is kind of funny. Kenta Sign Easy, they were average to me without Easy got some walk on it, which, alright, it's me. I'll give Becky this track called Becky. I'll give it this. Sometimes on interracial relationships as how your friends look at you when you say, oh, it's like we say, oh, you're in that white girl. What are you doing, boy? What you thinking, man? And then that type of shit. Like, yeah, it's there's some personal shit here. Oh, I mean, of course, Mama's good. Track Mama, that's good too. Like, you know, got your looking Mama, you know that and all. And then there are some songs that carry a theme, which the songs I have to call, this might leave you kind of sad, or somewhat. Well, we'll get to that later on. Woodlawn is him to his friends who was jailed up, got story was, finished jail, got some come up, and there is like a reference to reference of the late Kobe Bryant, which there's an interlude to him, a brief monologue from Jack and I talking about how the death of him affected him, like. Okay, which, yeah, remember that day very well. And then that was a fucked up day. And now I believe the saddest track on here, and you know why, Fetus. Which, oddly, is my favorite track on here, and yeah, it's still the saddest. The topic's all about, you know, becoming a parent way too early, and knowing what you gotta do in your life, especially if you got a daughter or a son, worry about what they gotta worry if you'll be financially stable in the position. Like, the villain's very somber. And when I say sad, it's courtesy of, yeah, the brother's courtesy of Parker Corey of Injury Reserve. And since I mentioned them, here's the verse. She said she might have missed a period, but her mind is somewhere else and I'm a sixth period. You know, 17 delirious, we think we'd be dependent on the scare of our parents' shit. C, plan B, we gotta be plan B, shit, maybe C, D, E, and this is my C, yeah, C, yeah. We pay cash, really the damn C, cause I'm gonna got my own account, this shit I can't see, either time's flying on my mind, or we be playing tricks, can be my baby girls already turning six, praying like you got, like your daddy, stay from drugs, hope I can see the other hope I can be the half my father my mama was, yeah, hope I can be half the father that the mama was. That verse was from Stepha T. Groggs. It's sadder in hindsight considering the rapper passed away a month before this was released. Yeah, that made that shit kind of very heavy. At first I listened to this shit, I kind of teared up a bit, because it's like, this got me in a mood. But yeah, overall this album is a very much a pull for me, like, it may not be as pop rappy as it is, but I will say it's more unique in the right direction. Like, yeah, not everything was, you know, interesting, but I will say the tracks that stood up really got me saying, all right, this dude really got it. But yeah, this album pretty decent. And now, look what time it is. What time is it?
Adventure time.
Okay, game time?
Griselda time.
Yes.
Now, even though West Sucker did not release this album, this month because of some things, although I don't know when he released it, because I know there's going to be another Griselda time next month with Conway and Armani Caesar dropping an album, which y'all look into. But this is, not talking about Boaty James. Boaty James in his third album this year, his first one, you know, signing Griselda Records with the Versace tape. And of course, featuring production from none other than Jay Versace. Which, damn, I never would have thought. Yeah, I never would have thought that this kid I knew from Vine would end up making beats for Griselda. Or anybody from Griselda, man. That, but yeah. I gotta say for this first entry, like, yeah, it's kind of short. It's like 22, 23 minutes, which right with 10 tracks, and I'll say it's basically what you know from Bodie Ray. His style of ambitious stony street rap, like the things that I kind of like about rap like this. He always had this nonchalant deadpan delivery about the cocaine's way of life and, you know, how it's like his soul, like all that type of shit. Like in the intro, there's a clip of somebody saying somebody stole a pair of $2,500 Cartier sunglasses off someone by knocking their ass down, carrying them to store like it's nothing. It's like you just knock somebody like, ooh! and then just walk like nothing happened, like that. Like you could just casually just be like, okay, and I went to the market. You knock somebody's ass out. I don't know why I'm just thinking some stupid. Okay. Anyway, yeah. Yeah, the style might repeat itself time to time, but it repeats, but it's not repetitive. It's like, despite something new to say, like, you get songs like, you know, songs like Maria, New Wave, and Brick Band EXO, that's like the point of what it does, what it does shit like. You got lyrics like, now we can build a dam, we can build a few bridges, let's get it, see the Ray Van, take that left, don't feel the skirt, get your old man crawlers, get your burn on niggas. Pray to God, my right hand never wouldn't turn a witness for the God. Just a face, always turn up, always for some business. You can't ever relate. If you ain't find, you never saw no chickens. Damn, I am. But yeah, I will say I got two tracks that I really particularly love in here. Cartier, which got this old grimy ass beat. And I will say the music video is kind of weird, even though, like, I posted the music video that says Cartier, quote things, it says anime, which. Okay, I don't know, maybe I don't get it, but it's just like, I mean, anyway, the track is fucking fire, and of course, you get the feature verse from El Camino, as your song's appeal, like, it's first talking about how he would ride and die with some people, but the only one who did the same to him was his mom, so all that shit, which, alright, and of course, you got the hunt piano, but that's, which, that shit is just effective, like, effective to the lyrics and all. Like I gotta say, Jay Versace, he does production it sounds like somebody like a DJ Premier or Alchemist or somebody in their, like, somebody in the game in their 40s would do. But this is something like you hear stuff like old soul samples, TV clips, TV movie clips. I think there's one clip from, what's that show? Some show called, Ozark, something, I don't know, I forgot. It does vibe what Griselda is as a collective, you know, vibe by, you know, very luxurious sounds, like, example of that being Blatianka, which that's my favorite beat on there, even if it is kind of short. And let's be honest, this, like I said, this album is short, like, some soundtracks are like, maybe, like, I think long shot might be maybe 3.5 minutes or so. But yeah, some tracks are just fucking short. And I will say, like, Chuck, the album does, you know, it doesn't allow much features, like, there's like maybe like a few features here, like El Camino, I listened to one, but they are pretty slim. Like the one other feature track is the final Roxy Cotton with Westside Gunn, Keisha Plum, and Tanya DeLise, which that was kind of short. It did feel like that, they just said it was pushing all together, and yeah, I mean I will say it's a fine, you know, debut for Griselda for him. I still say The Price of Tea in China is still the better album from him, and I need to get on the second album, which I know that's on Bandcamp. That's on Bandcamp, which I gotta get on that. Yeah, I really enjoyed this Boy James album, man. This been a year that I'm just saying I fuck with this guy. I'm gonna say this is the year that this says, wow, I'm just loving this dude's work more and more, and hopefully he continues to do more. So yeah, I fuck with this shit. And now the last couple of highlights. This actually two projects released from the same guy. You remember Hudson Mohawk?
I believe I do. Yes.
Dead Sick, yeah.
Yep. Yep, yep. He released two projects this month. And I mean, I was surprised when he released, like... And they're mostly instrumentals. Okay, the first one is called... The first one's called BBHE. And the other one's called Poom Gems. That's P-O-O-M Gems, which... Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah. And yeah, he got some, yeah, by the way, he got some bizarre album covers for those mixtapes. But yeah, I say, like, I'm doing this for both of them because my opinion applies to both of them as well. Like, I mean, they are some very interesting instrumental albums. Like, well, albums because, like, they offer this very interesting wonky sound. This wonky sound, like, you get a lot of glitchy work on it because he had this weird hip hop sound, which looks like it combines both hip hop electronic and a lot of glitch sounds, like on BBHE, damn, which, yes, like I said, when you see the album cover for this, you wonder. Like, it starts with over Brooklyn, which is more epic sounding. Like, there is one track, Spruce Illis Bumper, which sounds like some real drop music. I drove this track one time when I was going to the store for something. I will say the one track that is the most glitchiest is called Well Park, because that is a weird ass track, and I want to use that track, and I think I used that track on one of my Instagram Reels things, which, yeah, I've been doing that shit for the past month. Like, damn, I just like doing that shit a lot. I guess you'll find my Instagram, but yeah. Poom Jams is this offer a different sound. Like, I will say Poom Jams is longer. Like, okay, like Poom Jams is 41 minutes, the other one's like 27 minutes. It's like an hour for music. We could combine both, and they do what they do best. They deliver a bunch of weird experimental tracks that they got the elements of, like I said, glitch experimental sounds. And yeah, I gotta say, the more I talk about, kind of like it more. I think I did miss Hudson Mohawk for a while because I ain't heard shit from him in a long while. But I gotta say both albums are worth recognition if you're into a lot of experimentation instrumentation. And now for some quick runs. Mulatto, which I've heard from the double star freshman this year, which, yes, Cypher's coming soon. Her new album, Queen of the South, which I did talk briefly about, and I'll say this, especially what you hear from most female rappers today, she did what she did. It's fine. I won't check it, I'm not clamoring again, but it does what it does. Like, you do get that Southern Trap shit, although it's, I think it might be more Houston based or Texas based than ATL, although I want to say a different ATL sound. I know she's from ATL, but I will say it's fine, it's a fine album. Nas for King's Disease, and I say it's definitely better than Nasir. Because I'm in Nasir. And I will say slightly better because this has some more mainstream touches. Like, I know this whole album is produced by Hit-Boy. With the album, Nas does what he does best. He always, even though Nas is lurking by now, you know what he's all about. About, you get features from him, from Charlie Wilson, which he did good, and Anderson .Paak, of course, The Firm, AZ, Foxy Brown, a bunch of names I ain't heard in a long while, but yeah, I will say, and Boosty B, okay, it's pretty good. I will say, there are some tracks that I kind of figure out, and they're not working, like, They're spicy with Fabio Ferg and ASAP Ferg, or just Ferg, or whatever the fuck he's called now. Replace me with Big Sean and Don Toliver. I thought, well, okay, you know what? That was kind of alright, although it wasn't much on Don Toliver's verse. But yeah, this is a decent album from Nas. I still, he's been on, like, it's very, very, like, alright, it's alright. And, I'm gonna say, and next one, talk about, Vic Mensa got a new EP called The V-Tape, and before you ask, no, he is not doing that 90 punk shit, just so you know, this is rapping Vic Mensa. This is him just rapping, and, well, it's decent, it's alright, like, I know Vic Mensa ain't been the good year considering the fact that he got some shit for talking shit about Chula Fantasia at the war show. Although I will say maybe talking about in front of Dead Man's Bomb, it's kind of not the right move. But I don't know. But yeah, anyway, this EP, his EP, I say it's the same before about his last album, as in, you know, the one that's not 90 Punks, because I wore that shit. But yeah, this one's all right. It's pretty all right. It's pretty. Like I said, what mostly Vic Mensa goes by, and I can say it's pretty decent. Next up, Disclosure with Energy. I gotta say, I was thinking some of this shit. We talked about the one track with Amina and Slow Tide, that still bangs. He got some with Mick Jenkins, that's still good. With Who Knew? This one track got Kalani and Sid with Birthday, which, alright, that's pretty good. River with Common, which also pretty good. Like, there is, like, a lot of, like, I won't say a lot of, like, I want to say, well, not dancehall, but more, like, sort of, like, African house beat tracks in here, which they got something right to me. Like, I like this one track from him, from them and Blick Bassey called Cinepa, which I bump the shit every day because that shit. But some of the track Energy, like the interview thing about you. I will say the tracks with Khalid on them, which I'm gonna be honest, I like Khalid, but I think those tracks with him together is kind of like meh. It's kind of very meh to me. The thing is, I don't get, like, I'm on Spotify now, and Energy is only on, they only got the deluxe version of Energy of the album, because I'm guessing they don't got no regular-ass edition, because it's a long-ass album. It's like an hour and 22 minutes. I mean, I'd be complaining, except I actually like some parts of the album, so there's that. I mean, there's a lot of remix for Birthday, which, okay. Okay, but yeah, I gotta say, this album is, it's serviceable. Like, I can listen to some tracks of it. Like, I can definitely go back to some tracks of it. So yeah. That's a good one. Well, and now the one low light, which I'm pretty sure you didn't mention, because let's be honest, I'm doing this just to get traffic.
Oh.
And, you heard of Black Bear?
Can't say that I have.
Oh boy. Oh boy. Well, yeah, he has an album out called Everything Means Nothing. And I'm just gonna sum this in one word. If y'all don't like Post Malone, you'll hate him. It's one of those sad boy, white boy, trap rap. You know what? Actually, you know what? Not rap, because all he does is singing this shit. It's like trap pop shit. And the thing is, after this, I'm not talking shit about Post Malone.
Oh, now I know what that is. Why would you do that to yourself, man?
like I said, the traffic, but fuck it. But yeah, this album is bad. It's kind of boring, really fucking boring. It's like, he talks about being an asshole. He talks about him just being an asshole. He's aware of it. It's like, okay, you're still kind of an asshole. I don't give a fuck. It's basically sad fuckboy first problems. The album. You know what I'm saying? It's like, oh, this girl don't love me. Oh, 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 fuck them bitches. Oh, like, oh, I'm chill. I'm chilling in some random exotic place, and I'm still depressed. It's like, okay, wow, you made me not feel bad about you. You sound like a total fuckboy. Considering one of the tracks, in there is Hot Girl Bummer. Where do we get that from? Yeah, that shit. And it's like, damn, this is some, also, this dude can't fucking sing. He sounds awful. Sounds awful to me. Sounds awful. He sounds like he just phoned this shit in. Like, even Top Check sounds so edgelord to it. Like, me and your ghost, Queen of Broken Hearts, I felt that. Sabit and Cabo, like, oh, see, that's what I'm talking about. Oh no, Sabit and Exotic Place. I'm like, okay, you're practically rich. Who gives a fuck? And then you got to call why are girls falling for you? I don't know. Why is girls? Who is girls? Why is Gamora? You guys got to throw that in. But this is real short because, like, here's the thing. I usually go to the album like two, three times to get in my head. Also, just once, and I'm like, I can't do this anymore. I can't listen to this shit anymore. Like, this is definitely not music for me. But that don't mean it sucks even less, because this is some dog shit right here. And I don't even. If I want to listen, like, you listen to better shit than this. At least Post Malone will get a joke or two out of it. And this is like, nah, no, I'm out. Also, I need the cringe for a reason. I don't know.
Ah, the cringe.
And with that said, I'm done. I'm getting some water.
Okay, now that's over, time for me to tap in here. This is the shortest list I've had in a while, just 5 top albums and 4 that I can breeze pretty quickly. Hell, I can probably breeze this first one pretty quickly too. So starting with the top picks, first off, this new Pig Destroyer EP, The Octagonal Stairway. Well, technically new-ish. As previously mentioned, like, the first 3 songs on here are all ones that have been released in the past. The title track, originally from the 2013 Adult Swim Singles program, Cameraman from the 2018-2019 run, and then one of the other songs on here, The Cavalry, which was a part of that Decibel Magazine Flexi series of singles. Apparently it was like the 100th single to come out as part of that series. And apparently this is part of like some... They mentioned in an interview that, like, came out today that, like, there's a bunch of projects and stuff that they're trying to do so they can get that stuff, like, out of their system. Like, obviously, this new EP. Apparently, they got a live album coming out soon. They're working on a split project with another band. And then, apparently, they're going to go and record another new album that's going to hew closer to the more traditional grind Pig Destroyer formula. So, yeah, this is part of them trying to get all the weird experimental shit out of their system. Because, okay, so these first 3 tracks are pretty, expected grind territory, and Cavalry and Cameraman sound pretty much like their original releases. Octagonal Stairway has some updated mixing and even kind of removes that prominent pick scrape from, like, the intro of the song, from the original version at least. So, you know, there's that. And then you have the last 3 tracks here. There's Noose Channel 6, Head Cage, and Soundwalker, which are all more these experimental droning synthetic pieces, kind of hinted at given that the first 3 tracks have, like, their, you know, weird synthetic accentuations here and there. You know, News Channel 6 just being an interlude, Headcage, which apparently was written before the actual Headcage album came out, is just kind of this decaying, garbling synth with these hazy voiceovers, and then the closer is this 11-minute drone piece, which has apparently credited guest contributions from Igor Cavalera. So, you know, that's a thing. And, yeah, there's some pretty gnarly-ass, you know, bangers in the first half, and those weird, you know, experimental tangents in the back half. It's a really interesting kind of split down the middle, and, Yeah, so, you know, pretty solid listen, six tracks, you know, you get what you get. And I cannot wait to hear whatever those upcoming projects might turn into. Right, second album here. Black Crown Initiate, Violent Portraits of Doomed Escape. First heard about this band because I'm pretty sure their singer made some guest contributions to the soundtrack for Doom Eternal, which I sadly still have not played. But yeah, I'm only now getting around to these guys. Made sure to check out both their previous albums before diving into this one just to kind of get the big picture. Generally speaking, Black Crown Initiate exists in that sphere of like technical, proggy, death metal slash metalcore. If you look up their Spotify profile, you get recommendations for bands like The Zenith Passage, Beyond Creation, Fallujah, Archspire, Revocation, Obscura, and even Rivers of Nile. So think that general sphere of the contemporary metal landscape. Although, if there's one thing that I think separates them, it's that there's a very distinct focus on melody in comparison to some of those other acts, especially on this album, which seems to play up those melodic songwriting aspects more than anything else. Hell, it opens up with this really great melodic acoustic passage with clean sung vocals on the track Invitation, before getting into this really kick-heavy 6-8 drum groove with similarly heavy guitars, the vocals alternately screaming and singing over top as well. You got Son of War following afterwards, building this huge apocalyptic sense of menace with the way the guitars constantly layer and build the rhythms and melodies on top of each other, while also throwing in some pretty dense, fill-heavy drum beats, and letting the vocals similarly bring that dread with, you know, it's really gruff delivery. With songs like Trauma Bonds in particular is where you get more of the melodic side of things. The drums and bass have a pretty steady backbone for the really beautiful guitar interplay. And of course, Andy Thomas's clean vocals really do a lot to like build the track up. And Gears in Frigid Light provides a solid balance between those two extremes of heavy and melodic. Really dark, suffocating atmospheres contrasting the more melancholic clean passages. You also get Death Comes in Reverse, which has more of a sort of swinging, kind of grooving beat to it. The guitars, you know, chugging along with those drum rhythms that are less blaring and focused on those intricate fills and a general chugging vibe. Yeah, this is some pretty strong overall, you know, technical death metal core, I guess you would call it. Nice mix of heaviness, the technique, really great melody work and the vocals and guitar work. Yeah, go listen. And I still gotta play Doom Eternal now. So, moving on from that to this new Primitive Man album, Immersion. Their third proper full length, and gesturing vaguely at the state of the world right now. Yeah, it seems about a good time as any for their particular brand of extremely nihilistic, downbeat Doom and Sludge. This is actually their shortest album overall. Like, of their three albums, this one is 6 tracks and 35 minutes. Just shy of half the length of their 2017 album full length. Well, their 2017 full length Caustic, if I could talk, which ran nearly an hour and 20 minutes. And it's about 5 minutes shorter than their debut album Scorn. But that doesn't really stop this album from bearing down as hard as it can in every second of those 35 minutes. These very slow burn tempos with those very buzzy, bass-heavy low-end guitars driven by lots of feedback and just droning on and on, coating every second of the album, mixing in some of those more higher note buzzing tremolos to ramp up this unnerving sense of anxiety with the deep bellowing vocals spouting out a lot of intense passages, you know, in sparse places. The drums slowly but surely pound out these very minimalistic grooves that ride the slow tempo of each song, with the occasional fill or blast beat to mix things up, like in the song Menacing. It's this really overall this bitter, decaying, slow burn of an album boosted by lyrical passages themselves being every bit as nihilistic as expected, just kind of a giant fuck you at how fucked everything is. So, yeah, you know, assuming you can make it out through those vocals. And one interesting example being from the album opener, The Lifer, where a lot the lyrics that are there are, of course, about, you know, just life being extremely torturous and stressful, with even some very specific references to the stresses of touring and being in a band. Just a quote from that last passage, driving on miles of pitch black asphalt road, blood pissy mattresses and hard floors, and the monetization of self. You're only one bad tour, one bad album, or one bad member from falling apart. due to the desperation and crimes that come from living in the end times. Yeah, being in a band kind of sucks if you really think about it for long enough. Why do you kids do it? Don't. Don't make the mistakes that I've made. But that's neither here nor there. Yeah, much like a lot of other albums I've been listening to this year, like that Acacia Strain one from last one, this feels like it rides the mood pretty perfectly. Now, moving on to album number four, this being the new Expander album, Neuropunk Booster Gang, and, you know, I'll admit, I'm pretty sure I checked this one out based purely on the album cover. I mean, granted, I know this is a band being pushed by Profound Lore, which tends to have a pretty solid lineup of extreme underground, you know, heavy and, you know, metal acts and stuff. Shit, I think Lingua Ignota is still signed to them, as of this recording anyway. So, yeah, I'm aware of their pedigree in the field, but, again, mostly that album art. So, first experience with them and how to describe their sound, well, imagine, you know, contemporary thrash in the vein of, like, Power Trip and Oozing Wound, with a dash of Skeleton Witch's atmosphere, and dump a whole bunch of DMT and hallucinogenic acid on top while watching Ancient Aliens. So, yeah, thrash basically by way of Mars Attacks or Destroy All Humans. A lot of the typical genre trappings you'd expect from the underground extreme of the genre here. A lot of really cutting, buzzy guitar riffs, a lot of really standout bass grooves, the drums pounding out double-time D-beats and half-time grooves, with the occasional time signature switch-up, all swirling into an explosive blast that maintains that energy from track to track, with songs like Hyperflesh, Edificium, and Waste Ranger, keeping that momentum at full force while slowing things down at times to help vary things up. And, you know, it's a pretty consistent vibe from track to track. So, as for what makes it stand out, as you could probably gather from my weird alien comparison, it's mainly all in the production, which helps give the album this very otherworldly stylistic feel. It's most immediately obvious in the vocals that have this surreal kind of cutting echo to them, whether screaming or like bellowing, in a way that kind of hovers and lingers above most songs with this very creepy ethereal presence. The guitars have a very brittle but hard tone in their production. They still mix in a good amount of like effects work, especially in the leads and the chord progressions, to have this kind of squealy, kind of ominous quality, like this biomechanical alien landscape. There's even just some straight up like synth work in a lot of places, whether it be accentuations to the vocals in places like the song Loyalty Illusion (RAT) or even Crypto Steel and the title track, both opening with these fully synthesized intros. Of course, the lyrics, if you look at them, like you could probably read it on a site like, you know, Encyclopedia Metallum or something, are full of big science words that sound like the script of, you know, any sci-fi program. You know, Vesicans, Crime Squad Gambits, Extruding Duration Conductor, Teleremote Systems, and just a bunch of stuff that kind of sounds like what Star Trek Technobabble would sound like if Gene Roddenberry had a vest full of municipal waste patches. And that is a sentence that no other human being has ever said up until this very moment in history. I'm not sure whether I should be proud of that or not. But yeah, if you want some really, like, trippy, and I mean trippy AF extreme thrash, yeah, Neuropunk Booster Gang. There's a fucking album title for you. And then the last of my major recommendations. Is it time for Rob to go back on his contemporary hardcore BS? Yes. Yes, it is, with this new Year of the Knife album, Internal Incarceration. Honestly, I just saw a music writer I follow recommend it, and I checked it out on a whim, and of course, it fucking slaps and bangs in the same way as other great hardcore records from the year, like that new End project. Right out of the gate, the album opener this time blasts you with furious drums, aggressive buzzing guitar riffs full of bass and low end, and healthy amounts of, you know, feedback as the song slows into its fucking huge-ass breakdown climax, and from there, the album is a non-stop assault of those very, very heavy beats and massive, huge grooves. Virtual Narcotic hammers the double kick on hard during the outro with the vocals bellowing to this menacing, gnarly extreme, with Manipulation Artist maintaining that rapid, pummeling energy, along with a lot of its more breakdown-heavy parts as well. That title track slams with some mid-tempo groovage before slamming into equally furious D-beat passages with this kind of 6-8 beat that breaks away and allows just enough of a pause for an extremely potent Righteous Scream of the song's title. The sound is pretty consistent from track to track, and having checked out the album they released before this, this being their second album, if I haven't already mentioned, yeah, this is definitely a full-on upgrade for the better. In comparison, you know, the tempos and beats here are a lot grittier and faster. The riffs and general production is a lot more amped up in a way that outclasses their first record, which seemed a bit more basic by the contemporary standards of the genre. Yeah, the sound of the album just does a lot more justice to their general songwriting, and this just slaps and slaps and slaps from track to track to track. So now, with those top recommendations out of the way, let's delve into the four here that I have on the quick round. First up, this new washed-out project, Purple Noon. Not as interesting to me as Mr. Mellow was. Mostly this exists as like the purest definition of a vibe record. Like you just throw it on and you let the very pretty and lush sounding beats just kind of whisk you and your problems away so you don't have to think about that kind of stuff. Dark Zero, Zero Two. If that name doesn't sound familiar, or if it does sound familiar, in both cases here's a little heads up. First time I heard about them was an EP called Xenotype that they released in 2007 via Adult Swim, and I believe this is their first proper full-length total, and similar to the style I heard on that EP, this is a lot of, you know, repetitious, you know, lush kind of trance electronic beats, so again, another record to just put on and vibe. There's some really good melodies and stuff going on in the production, so it's got that going for it. And thankfully, no references to a mediocre anime series. There's this new Misery Signals project, Ultraviolet, which I enjoyed overall. I think it brings some pretty decent, you know, metalcore, you know, breakdowns and grooves and everything. The vocals, you know, they got back one of their original vocalists. He does great on this album. Songwriting-wise, it feels like it's not anything you've haven't heard before, but it's solid enough in what it's doing that it's not terrible or anything. Yeah, it's a decent listen overall. And last but not least, this new Kralis project, Maskathexis. Kralis being one of the more prominent bands in underground extreme metal, never one to let a year go by without some kind of project, full-length, EP, what have you. I run really hot or cold on Kralis' sound. It depends, like, on my mood and whether they decide to go more death metal or avant-garde black metal. This one seems like it's trending more towards the avant-garde black metal side of things in a way that, for me, honestly just kind of feels like a less good version of, like, Imperial Triumphant. It's not bad or anything. It's just, I guess, the textbook definition of not my thing. So, leave it at that. And that's pretty much it. I don't really have any lowlights, so that concludes all the album discussion. So, time for the usual cleanup business. So, of course, as always, you know, be sure to subscribe to this podcast on Google Play and iTunes. New audio-only episodes, you know, go up when they do. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at SuperRezzo. Like us on Facebook. Visit the website, SuperResolution.com, for this podcast, podcast O&A, written articles, all that good stuff. Be sure to jump into our Discord to shitpost memes about, you know, Cactus Jack or whatever. And of course, shout out to the producer, Mr. E, for graciously letting me use this music for this podcast. Links to his shit down in the description. Thank you for listening to this month's album roundup. We'll, of course, be back next month with the next roundup and for the usual weekly business. So until next time. Seriously, McDonald's, it's not that special of a promotion.
Lame.
Jalapenos.